you discovered the music in the original Sanskrit of the Gita.
Yes.
And somehow you were able to incorporate that. Can you describe that to us?
Yeah. My love affair with the Gita has been going on for many years. And obviously there are many good translations of the Gita. As I started off by scribbling verses, trying to, you know, that like you go to lectures and you write stuff so that you can understand it better. And so I was going through this exercise mainly for myself as my own sadhana or spiritual practice, and got into this peeling layers of mythology and terminology and trying to capture the essence of each verse. Some of the masters along the ages described the Gita as a necklace of 700 pearls of wisdom. Isn't it a lovely analogy? And it's actually, I say that it's very accurate, this description. Each verse of the Gita is like a rounded, smooth, a pearl of wisdom that can roll around in your mind, and it is associated with the pearl before it and the pearl after it, and yet stands on its own right. And so I was working with these verses and trying to get to their essence and to put them in simple words that capture the commentaries around them. And as I was doing so, I started putting them in poem form. I don't know exactly why I did that. It seemed right to do so, and over time it evolved to putting them in four lines. I then put some rhyming into it. This was mostly ignorance. I did not know what I was doing as such, or to be more accurate, the intellect, which we think knows what it's doing, doesn't have a clue. In life in general. You can imagine my shock as I found out, out of my ignorance, I did not know that the Gita was a song or that it was put in a meter or what that meter was. Imagine my shock where I found that the format that I was writing was actually almost identical to the actual meter and rhyme of the Sanskrit original.
It has something to do with the amount of syllables?
Yes,
within.
Four lines of eight syllables. This is not any voice talking to me from the sky, or me saying that I'm spiritually evolved or anything. I'm just describing how things unfolded. And so as I was doing this, I went back again. The translation was many, many iterations, working on one verse a day or two verses a day sometime. And so I went back and put it in the exact syllable count of eight verses, and it is only then that I could start to hear the music of the Gita. And you can actually hear it, and you can actually sense that the syllable count is important, but sometimes need to be relaxed. And it's not just about rhyming, it's about the music of it. And then you get what it really was meant to do in the first place. Those commentators, these big masters, man, they weren't kidding. They are smooth pearls of wisdom, which when you meditate or when you think of them, meditating alongside the reading is highly recommended. Don't just read the book.
It's not like a novel
it's not like
through.
A novel. No, you can read it such, and there's no crime in that. But if you want the full effect of it, opening your heart and doing it alongside meditation, whatever form of meditation suits you, jogging, swimming, or formal meditation, you actually feel them doing their thing. They're rolling in your mind. There was a Tibetan teacher whom I greatly admire, as I was studying and practicing Tibetan Tantra and Buddhism, Lama Yeshe, who once said, don't get hung up about mantras as being something foreign or Eastern. You're using mantras every day, he says. currently you're thinking money, money, money. Why don't you change it to something more effective? And so, yes, this melodious of the Gita, yeah, our mind is contaminated with jingles and with ads and with verses that mundane verses, usually ones that are taking us down. I'm angry, 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 I want more, 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 or I'm a loser, 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 or I'm a winner, 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 whatever state of mind we're at right now. So feeding these smooth white pearls of wisdom into our mind and letting them roll does miraculous things. And this was my motivation in doing so. Once you get the hang of it, you really can't let go of smoothing the pearls until they're perfect.
One of the other things that you've done in this translation that I appreciate, you've taken some of the Indian words like
yes.
Brahman, Atman, Karma, Jnana, the Ganas, the Dharma, all of that. You've simplified that language. So Brahman is the divine,
yeah.
You know, or Atman is the inner self.
Yeah.
And you've also made this more available to the feminine as
yes.
well.
Yeah. Well, I'll begin with the feminine. It became very important to me this was only late in this 12-year journey, to make sure that it is written for women not less than it is for men. Here is a scripture written 2,500 years ago, completely different social setting. The teachings are very profound and they're not biased against any gender. In fact, they're beyond the ego and everything. And yet virtually all of the 200 existing translations have fallen into this of translating it in male form. And I thought, hey, you know, if I was a woman, this would not sit right with me. Why, where there's these beautiful, inspiring translations that elevate us to mimic, to aspire to what the yogi is like. He accepts the pleasure and pain even-mindedly. His home is nowhere and everywhere. These are great verses. Why the he? At first, it seemed like such an impossible task that I was even contemplating making two versions of the Gita, speaking for women and speaking for men, because it's such an autobiography. You miss the whole book if you don't understand that this is a book written about you and for you. It's not about some prince in some ancient. And how can that be if it's speaking and not in the gender that speaks
so
to me? So, and today this is more important than ever. We have women not only participating but leading spirituality and yoga and so forth. And so this ancient scripture, I felt needed to be brought to the current century and to speak to be woman empowering and speak to women as it does to men. And as for the terminology, yeah, that has been important for me from the beginning, but it's interesting that it's only very late in the 12-year journey, only the last 2 years, was I able to take the last mile, because I was very, very sensitive, careful not to miss or to water down the expressions. And so the Gita is not some, you know, wishy-washy, tree-hugging theme of, you know, Shanti, everything will be okay. It's more like a neurosurgeon's manual. Every word, every term means something. And so it was important to, for example, if you take Atman, which is the Sanskrit word for self, by using the original Sanskrit terms, you're actually missing the point of the Gita. I called it inner self, so as to guide our attention inwardly and not label it as something.
You know, I think, Isaac, because of your scientific nature, You know, you have. I mean, you're a doctor. You've studied. You've done all these program inventions and organizations and done all of that. So, in some ways, that's really served you in this translation because you, like a surgeon, you have gone in and looked at these little pieces.
It's interesting that you say that. I'm sure we, you know, we're all served by our biography, and then this is one of the themes, the deep themes of the Gita. Every moment in our life is dictated by everything we've done until now, and both serves us as well as entrenches us. I've experienced both the things that served me and the things that entrenched me, and working on the Gita helped grow working on them. I phrase the introductions to each of the chapters in vase shape. This is the feminine energy, the intuitive one, wanting it not to be square and pleasing. And so another big love of my life pottery was something that came through.
It would indicate womb-like.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So another question, if we can go to another question that Arjuna, and he asked questions throughout the Gita, is so wonderful. He asked to know the difference between detachment, and we were talking about that a little earlier, detachment, and renunciation, because it speaks about both of these. And can you at least begin to tell us before the break a little bit about that?
Sure. So as we just mentioned, every action we do is based on our past. This is what is known as karma. But the Gita goes an important step beyond that and invites us on this exciting journey to live in the world, to act in the world, but to learn the art of not acting out of ego. Here's a verse that describes this. Hoping gone, craving abandoned, tightly reining body and mind, ego's good deeds will still bind you. Such egoless acts do not bind. Such beauty and profound statement there. We act through ego. We think that this is unavoidable, and so all we can do in life until we meet the wisdom of the Gita is to try and act good acts rather than bad acts. The Gita says, ego's good deeds will still bind you, such egoless acts do not bind.
Oh, well, great. We'll talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is a translator of Gita, a timeless guide for our time. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Here with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is a translator of a new translation of the Bhagavad Gita, and the name of his book is Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. Isaac, I would love for you, there is an analogy that's in the Gita that talks about the ocean and how we're waves in an ocean. Can you illuminate that thought to us?
Yeah, the Gita takes us on this journey. We mentioned these three paths, the path of action, the path of devotion and intuition, and then the path of wisdom. We're invited first to learn the art of how to act wisely in the world, but then to realize really who we are. And the ocean is a great analogy that the philosophy of the Gita uses and describes. You see, we live our lives with great identification with this body that I have, this mind that I have, these memories, these emotions. And this is as though we were forgetful waves in an ocean. Oh, I'm this handsome wave. Look here at my beautiful wave wife. Such beautiful curves. Look at my foamy curls. Look at the wavelets that we have. This is my life. And, oh, I'm envious of this wave. He's racing ahead of me. I should go faster. This is the folly of our life. And from this, gradually, through the invitation of the Gita, arises wisdom. Yes, temporally, I am this wave. It goes up and it will subside and it will vanish the same way that this body sometime, and we never know when, maybe in an instant, maybe in 70 years, will be back ashes to ashes. You are not the wave. You are not this limited body and mind, reminds the Gita. You are the ocean itself. You are life itself. You are divine and consciousness itself. So am I wave or am I ocean? This confusion arises in our mind. Well, I am this body. I'm living in this body. I have these. Yes and no. Is the wave not also ocean? At the end of the day, only ocean is there. When we think of paradigms or aspects in our life where we have wisened up, we can more closely relate and understand this, right? Some people thin deep. This is a black person. I'm a white person. Hence, I'm different. This is a Jew. This is an Arab. Hence, we are different. When we are a bit more enlightened with that, enlightened meaning there's a bit more light flowing through us, the windows of our soul are a bit cleaner, then a deeper sense of unity is there. I see that his skin is black and mine is white. That's mere skin. We are human beings.
This is probably why so many, and you use quotes from many physicists who love the Gita.
Yes.
This is probably why they love the Gita, because it really, quantum physics is saying, hey, it's all energy, it's all connected.
Absolutely.
It's where we think we're separate, but...
This is the beauty of how you can have on the same scripture a Nelson Mandela saying the verses of this poem are what helped me endure prison, and physicists of quantum physics saying, hey, this is what we're talking about, because like you mentioned, it's all atom soup or consciousness, if you use the analogy of the Gita, it's all one. The diversity is only apparent as in the beautiful example that you mentioned, which the Gita uses, were waves of the ocean. Let us not get carried away with the waviness of us, and let us more identify with the greater truth. Yes, there is a wave there. Yes, here is my wife wave. Hey, we're all ocean. It's all water.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. There, I would love for you to also share with us the idea that when Arjuna asks Krishna, he says, well, what's the best spiritual path? You know, I just love it. I just love it that he's asking me very simple questions of, yeah, what is the best spiritual path? And the Gita really kind of gives us a deeper sort of,
yeah,
it doesn't say, well, this one or this one. It doesn't
quite
do that.
Yeah, and it's the same, the two types of questions of this nature that the prince raises. What should I do? Should I fight or should I not fight? And like you mentioned, it's a seemingly a very separate question. What's the best path? Is it Buddhism? He doesn't ask this specifically, but yeah, what is the best path? The Gita's answer is surprising and profound. The action, says the Gita, is not outside but inside. What matters is not action but motivation underlying the action. Two people holding a knife and cutting someone. One is a murderer, the other is a surgeon. Is it not true that the motivation is what matters more than the action itself? We've just not followed this all the way through. Here's a verse from the Gita that talks to this. Therefore, let your divine nature, inner self, restrain your mind, prince, your lower human one. Then smite your elusive enemy desire within, not without. The real battle is won. And so we're mesmerized by these battles in our life. My wife says this, my husband said that, my boss did so, what should I do? It's an external drama. Underlying it is our conviction that our happiness somehow lies outside and our suffering lies outside. And so the solution for this is outside. And the Gita says, oh, no. You got it all wrong. Within, not without, the real battle is won. Your enemy is never somebody outside. It's your desire. I want a new car and my boss did not give me a raise. And I think that if I get a new car, I'll be happy. And so I've created this immense drama, baseless drama. Gita says it's as real as your dream is.
Okay. Now, Isaac, all right. Let me ask you something. For example, I want you to give me a real practical example how you deal with it personally. So something happens in your life. Something crosses your path, and for a moment you're drawn into the drama. So what is the mechanism? What is it that you do in that moment to live a better life?
I'm happy you're asking this question because it's a good point. It's a good time to say that I can serve as a bad example. If there's anything that I bring to the table here, is that I'm in this imperfect situation of not claiming to be spiritually evolved and knowing how this helps people like you and me. We're advised by the Gita, and when an incident, sometimes incidents come in my life where I feel the wisdom of the Gita acting. I can see a wave of anger coming through, and there is more purity. The Gita spends several chapters describing these waves that go through us. And so there's wisdom, enough wisdom to sense, not I am angry, but a wave of anger is coming through me. It will pass. And that other times, I am overwhelmed by it. And as the Gita lovingly says, we use this at the beginning of our talk, patiently, O Prince, bit by bit, let one gradually calm one's mind. It's a gradual process. Let us prepare for failure because for many years we've been abusing the mind. Now we're trying to train this, to control this pack of senses as though they were a pack of wolves. So I can attest from my own experience, both where it works as well as where there's still a long way, for me personally anyway. But hey, you know, that's at least living life wisely. Even if to the last breath we've not attained that ideal goal, hey, at least we're doing something wise now. At least we're using every day, every experience to try and make it count, to try and use it as a learning experience. And the Gita, in this combination of wisdom that clearly describes impassionately, here is what is happening. We read it as a guide, as well as a consoling parent, a mother, if you will, hang on in there. It's okay. You fell. You broke. You bruised your knee. But that is life. You're making good steps on the path.
I think that that reminds me of the quote that you have in the beginning of the book by Gandhi, and he says, "Today the Gita is not only my Bible or my Quran. It is more than that. It is my mother. When I am in difficulty or distress, I seek refuge in her bosom."
This is my favorite quote in the world. This speaks so much to the essence of it. Here is a perfected being. We are imperfect. We have a long ways to go. Here is a frail human being who's Mahatma Gandhi, who's begun being very imperfect as a person and underwent this journey with the Gita as a guide. And at the end of the day, such a beautiful message for us today, speaking it of it as a mother and not as a text.
Right. It is lovely. It's a lovely way to end, to really remind us of the gentleness of this beautiful teaching in the Gita. I've been here with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is a translator of a new version of the Gita, called Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. And if you want to know more about his work, check out his website. It's called New Gita, N-E-W-G-I-T-A, newgita.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3682.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
Listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Your voice matters, and our shows are hosted and produced by students and community members like you. You are CJSF.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During heat waves, people experiencing homelessness are in great danger. Without shelter, they're more likely to die from heat-related illnesses than the general public.
If it's extremely hot outside, they're out in the heat, they don't have access to shelter, a lot of them don't have access to air conditioning.
Evan Shannon is a physician with the UCLA Homeless Healthcare Collaborative, which provides mobile medical care to unhoused Angelenos. He says many people who are unhoused also have untreated health conditions like heart disease or substance use disorders that can make them more vulnerable to heat-related illnesses. And he says sometimes it's tough for the mobile clinic staff to quickly tell if patients' symptoms are caused by heat-related illness or another issue.
I saw a patient who, it seems like, based on talking to some of his friends, was using fentanyl. And it was also one of those days where it was 100 degrees outside, and it was really hard to distinguish between if this patient was overdosing on fentanyl or was just passed out because of how hot it was.
So providing care may also become more complicated as the region experiences more hot days. And it's increasingly urgent for communities to provide water and air conditioning to people without shelter.
This is really a population that just has the greatest need.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.